And welcome everybody to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the official podcast for landgrantholyland.com, your free premier resource for all things for your national champion, Ohio State Buckeyes. We are at landgrant33. We are at landgrantholyland.com. We're on Facebook, and you can give us a call at 215-383-3986. That number again, 215-383-3986. I am joined here by my co-host, Chuck. Chuck, how you doing, buddy?
Matt, I'm doing better than I ever could have thought possible.
I really am. It almost doesn't even seem real, does it?
A bar that allowed both dogs and children in it. And neither one of those things particularly enjoyed our watching of the game. So,
I don't know
if you've ever been kicked out of a bar, but
I was kicked out of a bar. I'll tell you that we can go into that story, I guess, at the end of this podcast here. It was with my senior crawl. We're going to take a couple of calls here, Chuck, and then I have a bunch of things here that I'm sure I want to be able to go ahead and get in here with you. Let's go ahead and take our first call right now. Hello, welcome. You're on the Hangout in the Holy Land.
Hello. Oh, freaking H.
Oh, I freaking O, baby.
I love that. So, first of all, great fight, great content.
Thank you.
You're a long-time reader, tough-time caller. Anyways, that was an excellent game outside of that scary part in the middle where everyone had butter on their hands. I want to get to a question about maybe, you know, just one player. Where would you rate Ezekiel Elliott's like last three games in the pantheon of three game stretches for Ohio State running backs against such strong competition?
That's a great question, and I think I'm going to want to study that a little bit more detail into the week, because I do think we need to take a moment here and really fully appreciate how ridiculous and how historical this has been. I would say that, you know, I'm 27. I don't think I've seen a more dominant Ohio State back since Eddie George. Like, I'm sure other people may have put in greater statistical performances at times, but in terms of, like, I'm going to give this guy the ball and he's going to carry eight people, and there's nothing that anybody can do about it. Over those last three games against defenses that good, it hasn't been since Eddie. He's just been outstanding. And what's crazy is, you know, Elliott is going to have surgery after this. He's busted his wrist. He wasn't even very good at the beginning of the season. So when he comes back next year with an experienced offensive line and both of his arms working, I mean, there's potential 2,000 yards for a season.
Yeah, and another thing I noticed is I think he's a great example of this. Like, I love Tressel. I love him as a coach. He had some great teams. I feel like the guys on these Urban Meyer teams just have a physical level that the Tressel players may not have. Like Zeke just breaking dudes down, shaking off contact. Jones chucking defensive tackles and linebackers like their cornerbacks. Do you think that's part of why they won?
No, I think that is unquestionably part of it. Urban Meyer has moved Ohio State's recruiting level to a place where they haven't really seen in recent memory. I mean, when you sign top three recruiting classes for 3 years in a row, and they're going to have another top 10 one this year, and guys who are going to be, you know, early NFL draft picks.
Daniel Sharp to do too.
It's absolutely the physicality and the speed all over the field is something we didn't see here with Tressel. Not taking anything away from Tressel, his player development was outstanding. Brought a lot of professional football players to Ohio State. But the not to retreat here into cliches and everything, but the speed on this team was really something else.
All right, now I just gotta say the great year started rough, but it came out strong. But they gotta be ready. You're the king now. You got a target on your back. But the other team's going to be coming at the king. As Omar once put it, you best not miss, though.
You best not miss. Buckeyes are going to be getting everybody's best shot next season. But I think we're going to talk about more a little bit on the show. As good as this team was, next year should be even better.
All right. Thanks for taking the call. Oh, wait.
Yeah. Oh, I.O. Have some fun tonight, man.
You too.
All right. Chuck, you still with me?
You bet.
Hello. Yeah, hey, why don't we jump off from there? Let's talk a little bit about the man of the hour here, Mr. Ezekiel Elliott, who has three games in a row, I believe now, with at least 200 yards rushing, picked up nearly 7 yards a carry on a good defense, perhaps one not as statistically dominant against the run as Wisconsin or Alabama, but certainly a team of no slouches, and you know, really put the team on his back, though.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And, yeah,
to answer that caller's question, I mean, like you said, we got to look up the numbers to get official with that, but I can't remember in my lifetime at least a better three-game stretch against that quality of opponent. And I mean, Carlos Hyde did very similar things last year, just putting the team on his back game after game because Braxton Miller was a little bit up and down, you know, on the whole, had a fantastic season, but certainly struggled at times, wasn't perfect. And in those games was when Carlos Hyde really ate, and Ezekiel Elliott has picked up that torch in a big way. I thought Jones, other than the issues with protecting the football, Cardale Jones played fine, but, you know, I don't think we're walking out of there victors without a night like that from Elliott. So.
No, it's just so crazy to look at this because there were lots of reasons why Ohio State should not have won this game. Oregon's defense, we said this multiple times on this podcast, all over the site. This is a team that is going to give you yards, but is exceptional at creating turnovers and winning that margin. Here they go. Really, fundamentally, won the turnover margin here 4-0, other than the Mariota interception at the very end of the game when he's just kind of chucking the ball here, taking tons of scoring opportunities away from Ohio State. And I thought Oregon's secondary, all things considered, really played pretty well. And Ohio State not only won, but they really kind of won going away. And you just think if maybe Ohio State only has two turnovers instead of four, they could have won by 30. And it's completely because of Elliott. And the amazing work that he did there, giving Jones a lot of flexibility with what he's able to do, opening up the playbook, and just going right up the middle and crushing people time after time after time.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And like you said, I mean, the Oregon secondary really not, all things considered, didn't play too bad. I thought one of the most underrated plays of the game was in the fourth quarter. It was third and middle distance from about half field. And Jones hit Jalen Marshall on just a beautiful play, you know, faked the handoff, and Marshall ran a post towards the middle of the field. And Jones, the ball went 30 yards in about half a second, and just a rifle shot right into Jalen Marshall's chest, and he reeled it in. And that, I thought that was, you know, for non-scoring plays, that might have been the actual backbreaker because, you know, the game was still well, not necessarily well within reach for Oregon, but it was still certainly a contest at that point, and that first down helped set up the straw that broke the camel's back, certainly.
I know exactly what player you're talking about, and I couldn't agree more. One of the things that I thought was so impressive about Cardale, you know, not just in this game, but really over this three-game hot stretch, this might just be me. I never felt like he really dominated a complete game necessarily from throwing the football. But the work that he was able to do on third down, and especially third down and long, where it's a passing down situation and – defense is pinning their ears back and there's a rush coming, and where he's able to pinpoint the ball and the accuracy and the power on those throws on third and long, there's nothing more demoralizing than, you know, when you're facing such a powerful rushing attack as Ohio State, to get them into a third and passing situation and then just have their third string quarterback, you know, unleash a rifle shot on you and you can pick up a 23-yard gain. Like even regardless of what's happening there on the field, that's just psychologically crushes you. And Cardale Jones was awesome at that. It's a treat to watch.
Yeah, this game was very reminiscent of the Alabama game in terms of those third and middle to third and long plays. OSU was 8 of 15 on third down and held Oregon just 2 of 12, which was outrageous. I mean, the fact that we did that to Alabama was crazy enough, and doing it to an offense like Oregon and just forcing them to go for it on fourth down a handful of times and forcing them to punt, forcing them to settle for field goals, especially instead of touchdowns. We actually just had a tweet at us by Evan at Young Go Yard says that those field goals instead of touchdowns were absolute momentum savers and kept us alive. And I couldn't agree more. It really, you know, the tide turned on those plays where, you know, Ohio State was able to take the air out of the ball a little bit, put together some sustained 5 and 6 minute drives, and keeping Oregon's high flying offense to just 3 points, especially coming off turnovers. I mean, they did everything they had to do.
You bet. Hey, I'm going to go take another call here real quick, and then I want to get back to that point because I have something else to say here. But first, hey, welcome. You are on the Hangout in the Holy Land.
Hey, thanks. So am I a little bit selfish for already wanting a national championship next year because of how good and how young this team is?
No, my recommendation to you would be to go and enjoy some adult beverages and fully appreciate this, you know, today, and maybe take 24 hours, and then we could start looking at that. Because, I'm with you. next year was the year that we had all circled. And I think that's what kind of made this particular playoff run so enjoyable, is that there's no pressure thinking, well, almost everybody of consequence is coming back next season. The schedule might be even easier next year. But, you know, obviously you really can't take anything for granted, but the Buckeyes are going to probably be your preseason number one team next year and are going to be in a great position to repeat.
Yeah. And so, I mean, obviously this is going to be a big topic all spring and summer, but what are we going to do with quarterback at this point? I mean, we've got a national championship and two Heisman finalists. They've all kind of talked like they're not going to transfer, but what are they going to do on this roster together?
So, you know, so you're right. That's going to be something we're going to be spending quite a bit of time on talking about this offseason. So before this game, I would have told you that I thought that really by far the most likely scenario was that everybody comes back. I would have guessed that Braxton Miller would be the starter, and they would work in some short yardage packages with Cardale and find ways to maybe get the other guys on the field. And given the fact that Braxton isn't a lock to staying healthy the entire season, I would assume that JT Barrett would get some playing time. After this performance, I think that there may be a non-trivial chance, not saying it's the most likely scenario, but a non-trivial chance Cardale Jones declares the NFL draft. Because at this point, your stock is going to be really high after three great games over very good competition. Jones is old for being a redshirt sophomore. I think he's already 4 years out of high school, and may be able to get a higher draft position than he would waiting another 2 years for him to get a starting position. If that doesn't happen, I would have guessed that he stays until he graduates after this season and then graduate transfer somewhere, as Barrett eventually being the guy. But you know, who knows? We'll know a lot more in 2 days after the deadline to declare for the NFL draft.
Yeah, I guess Cardale declaring might actually be the best situation for us at quarterback.
Yeah, and don't forget, like, Ohio State is going to be fairly like loaded at that position for people like beyond this group of quarterbacks. Joe Burrow is only a three-star, but he just eviscerated everybody in Ohio high school and is a strong prospect. Torrence Gibson's a high four-star. He's a first-round draft pick type athlete who may not be playing quarterback. And then you got Danny Clark coming in 2017, assuming that Ohio State doesn't pick up a quarterback in this next class, who's going to be very, very strong. So Ohio State should have a lot of depth and a lot of high-end talent at that position group for years to come.
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of depth and talent, you know, I gave my heart to Carlos Hyde last year at running back, and I got to feel like with Big Zeke, I'm cheating on him a little. This is much more performance than I expected from he's what, a sophomore? This is amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's amazing for somebody who you know, hasn't been 100% healthy. I mean, just think back to, like, I mean, I'm gonna try to pull up that box score here for the Ohio State Navy game, but you know, he missed some time in summer camp, and you know, didn't really look right for a while. I mean, the beginning of the season, it was a non-crazy conversation to have, like, wow, maybe. You know, somebody else is maybe Curtis Samuel is the big back here for this season. Who knows? And now here we are, and it's one of the best guys that we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm ecstatic about tonight, and I'm incredibly excited about the future. And I mean, go Bucks!
IO. Hey, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks.
All right, everybody. That's real quick here. Our phone number is 215-383-3986. You can also tweet us at LandGrant33 or at MattSBN. Although I'm looking at TweetDeck right now. They're a little bit crowded at the moment. But that's okay. Chuck, the one thing that I wanted to mention here, you mentioned the Ohio State's defense stiffing in the red zone and being able to get Oregon to kick field goals. I think before the game, that was one of the things that people were talking about as one of the huge keys here, because Oregon's offense is able to move up and down the field so quickly. They're able to spread out and attack the field horizontally. But when you get crunched down here into the 10, the 15, the 20-yard line, you can't really do that. And that's where this offense becomes a little bit less efficient, where you can't use that tempo as much. And really, Ohio State just did play all of that perfectly, including getting a goal line stand and making a game that could have gone either way really flipped, you know, as we headed into the second half.
Yeah, and it really is astonishing that we've won the last two games, and in those last two games, we've completely gotten away from the dominating field position that really helped carry us to so many wins this season. That the tables got turned on us by Alabama in that respect, and we still, handled that game. And then it was the same one in this one. Oregon's starting field position wasn't phenomenal, but Ohio State's was, also not up to their usual standards. So it's crazy that, you know, taking away one of the best assets this team has, of their ability to flip the field and really take advantage of that differential in field position, and totally lost that in the last two games and didn't end up mattering, which is just crazy to me.
You're right. That's been, I think, one of the really fun things about this football team. What I think makes this, for me personally, and, you know, I'll want some more time to think about it, I guess. But right now, a more meaningful and more exciting championship than the 2002 team, because this is a team that, forget all the adversity and everything, but it's one that was able to find ways to win in many different ways. Here it's throughout the season, you count on a strong punting game and dominating the field position and even winning the turnover battle, to kind of consistently losing that against good competition and switching from a more read option based rushing attack to a more vertical based passing attack. Their defense has evolved throughout the entire season, and the playmakers have evolved. Like, now I finally have the Navy box score pulled up. Your leading rusher in that game was JT Barrett, who only had 59 yards. Curtis Samuel was your leading, had 45 yards on 7 carries. Ezekiel Elliott was averaging less than 4 yards a carry. Like, there was a lot of a question here about who the back was going to be. Dontre Wilson was playing a much bigger part here in the offense. And now, like, that's completely evolved multiple times. Corey Smith out of the rotation, back in the rotation. It's been crazy.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, Corey Smith, only 2 grabs today, but went off for 76 yards, including a 47-yarder. So, you know, not making his presence felt all the way through, but certainly when it counted. I tend to agree with you about the 2002 team. I mean, I think the problem with sports is that we tend to have a very short memory about things and just automatically assume that this had to have been better. But I do agree with you. I think that probably the most exciting moment from that entire season, not counting the title game, was that 4th and 16 chuck up by Craig Krenzel to Michael Jenkins against Purdue, with almost no time left on the clock in the fourth quarter to preserve the undefeated season. That was probably like the biggest moment of that year outside the national championship game. So this team has overcome so much adversity, has found so many ways to get the job done, and just can hurt you in so many different ways. And I would take this team over this title game over the 02 title game in a heartbeat. So
yeah, I breaking news I want to make sure that we address real quick. I'm going to play the sound. That might have been a little bit loud, but at this point, you know, maybe production value is not going to be completely A+, because I think we could be excused. We've got a lot on our minds right now. We're champions. In addition to Ohio State dominating on the field here, the Buckeyes' future got a little bit brighter as during the game, Ohio State picked up a couple of big commitments. It's kind of weird because they're not in this recruiting class. At halftime, Ohio State picked up a 5-star running back in Kareem Walker. He is going to be in the 2016 class, I believe. He was somebody that was out of New Jersey, number 9 overall player in this class, somebody who was thought to be either a Penn State or an Alabama guy. Ohio State already has George Hill at running back in the 2016 class. So if you're looking for your successor to Ezekiel Elliott, it looks like it's going to be one of those two guys here. Really, really a huge big-time get for the Buckeyes. And then right after the game, right before we went on the air, Ohio State picked up their 3rd commitment in the last 24 hours with 2017 Bruce Judson, who is out of Florida. He's the 17th ranked overall player in that class. Is listed as an athlete. He could be a quarterback. I think some people like him as a defensive back, and we're going to have some more information on him as we get later on into the week and moving on. Because, you know, again, lots of things going on right now. for Ohio State. So the hits just keep on coming. I don't know if there's going to be a whole lot of changes here to the 2015 class, but 2016 and 2017 is looking a whole lot better than it did just 24 hours ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, yeah.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I tend not to get too hyped up over recruiting because in the next 2 or 3 years, so much can change with that. And these guys, you know, as most 16, 17-year-old kids are, can be pretty temperamental. But, you know, having that commitment is better than not having that commitment. And so I'm going to let myself get psyched up about that, too.
No. I mean, like, especially when you're looking at these ones that are 2 years away, and some of these kids don't even have driver's licenses yet. Like, you can't be like, you can't be that that pumped up and everything. But no, you're right. It's having it is better than not having it. Those are people that can help recruit other guys into the class and really and continue the momentum. Because there's one thing that's really helped Ohio State get over that hump and become such a dominant program for this year and overcome all of the injuries that they did. It's because of recruiting. One other thing here that I wanted to talk about here with you, and it looks like this article hasn't published yet. I believe it will today. It's still late here. So we can give our podcast listeners who are listening live for a little bit of a sneak peek. And that is a way too early look at the 2015 College Football Top 25. Ohio State wins the national championship. Yeah, wins the national championship this year on our list. They are the number one pick to start the preseason for next year, not just because they won the title. We weren't going to change this even if Oregon had won. Chuck, I imagine you can probably figure out why.
I don't have any guess.
No. Well, look, here are some of the players that are coming back to Ohio State next year. Joey Bosa, JT Barrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Jalen Marshall, Dontre Wilson, virtually the entire offensive line. And the entire 2014 recruiting class, where I think maybe two or three people saw snaps, and they're going to start working people like Dixon into that rotation. Ohio State's going to lose, going to miss Bennett. They're going to miss Grant. Maybe some depth at the defensive line isn't going to be as strong, but otherwise, this team looks completely stacked. I don't know if they're going to win the national championship next year, but I do feel really confident about this one prediction. Ohio State's next football game is at Virginia Tech. I think they're just going to beat the absolute shit out of Virginia Tech.
Oh, I see them winning that game by 40. Just because it's going to be the absolute – I mean, that's, running the scapegoat out of town. That's the last step there, even with the title game. I'm sure those guys have not forgotten what that felt like to be counted out so early and to fall to such a – really just a shitty opponent. Granted, there were a lot of extenuating circumstances. But, it's scary that this – I mean, we're a year ahead of schedule with this. We've talked about this ad nauseum on the podcast that, you know, no matter what happens, we're going to be more okay with it than normal because this wasn't supposed to be our year. We've been playing with house money for the last 6 or 7 weeks, and we were able to pull it off. Given that, is just absurd. So, absolutely, yeah. It should be everybody's preseason number one. And unfortunately, it's only going to increase the amount of hate for this program nationally from bitter people that I went to high school with that only have Syracuse basketball to root for and really feel the need to cut me and my rooting interest down, even though they don't have a dog in the fight, you know. So, but I'm ready for that, you know. You come at the champ, you better not miss. So.
No, you're absolutely right. The anti-Ohio State salt, I think, is going to be relatively high. Our other, they're filling out the rest of our top four. For the top 25 is good. We have TCU at number two. We have Alabama, and then we have Oregon throughout the top four here. You know, obviously, I mean, Alabama loses almost their entire offense, but at the level that they've been recruiting, is still going to be completely up there. TCU brings back nearly their entire offense from a unit that was terrifying, and Oregon returns most of their guys on both sides of the ball except for Marcus Mariota. So it's going to be interesting to see whether they can replace that quarterback. I know they're going to be active on the transfer market potentially for one Braxton Miller, who could be very strong there. But all four of those teams look to be very good, I think.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Just out of curiosity, where do you have Florida State in those rankings?
Well, let's pull it up here right now.
I want to say but it was somewhere around 7 or 8.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, so the rest of the top five, we have Florida State at 5, Baylor at 6, Georgia, USC, Clemson, and Auburn.
Okay.
Florida State's schedule for next year is easier than it was this year, unless some teams in the ACC make some really big jumps. I know they have Georgia Tech. They have a road game at Florida, who should be a lot better. But Florida State has a big question mark at quarterback too. They have a bunch of very promising people. They're all really young, and then they're losing a bunch of NFL talent all over the field.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, by the transitive property, Ohio State is at least 100 points better than Florida State, right?
At least the way that we can look at the season.
Okay.
11
yeah,
billion.
As long as we got that out of the way. I don't have a ton to disagree with about the top four as you stated it. It's a given that almost all preseason predictions will be laughably wrong. I believe in our Land Grant season preview piece, I picked Auburn. I picked Ohio State to get to the Final Four, but I had them losing to Auburn and Nick Marshall bringing home the Heisman Trophy, and we can see how that worked out. I think we all made some pretty silly guesses as to how that was going to go. But, you know, I don't think life's worth living if you can't wildly speculate and be wrong about a few things. Much like the opponents who had the Big Ten out of the playoff as of September 6th. So.
Oh, and don't think that I'm not above retweeting some of those. I mean, we saw with the level of discretion and subtlety that I was able to handle correctly forecasting Ohio State to win both their playoff games. And by that, I mean, I think I retweeted it every 10 minutes. So I'm not above retweeting some Clay Travis stuff here from week two. And that's part of the fun. And later this week, I know that you and I are probably going to dig into the round table that we did as a staff in the beginning of the season, and we can all laugh at all the dumb things that we all said, like how much is Braxton Miller going to play? Or I had Corey Smith as Ohio State's leading receiver, which turned out to be not smart. that's the whole fun of this.
The surprise performer of the season, I believe. I had I had Braxton Miller leading the team in rush yards as well. I guess any given Saturday would be the college football equivalent. It's really crazy to think about how just absolutely wacky and made up and pointless this all really is in the grand scheme of things. Because the college football gods, they respect no man's wishes.
That's true. So let me ask you something else here before we switch to some other breaking news, which is going to happen and everything. Who are, just off the top of your head, forget what we have here on our list here. Who are some teams that you think could be potential sleepers for next season? Like maybe outside of that top five, top 10 area, people that you think may be able to take a big jump?
I'm pretty bullish on Tennessee. I think they've done a pretty good job tearing up their recruiting trails, if I remember everything correctly. From looking at our recruiting guide to pieces, I think they've established themselves a good young stable of talent. I also, you know, living in Seattle and being way too overexposed to coverage of the University of Washington, I do think, to the best of my knowledge, Tyler Miles will not be the quarterback of the Huskies next year. And Tyler Miles is objectively pretty terrible at football. I saw a tweet during their bowl game against Oklahoma State that said, Tyler Miles has great vision in the sense that he's not literally blind. He looks like if he's—I mean—he's built like a slightly smaller version of Cardale Jones, but he just does not really seem to know how to throw a football. And so I think if he is gone, if I'm remembering that correctly, with the sort of young talent that they've built under Chris Peterson, then I think, you know, they're not going to be contending for the playoff by any means, but I think they could be one of those teams that gives the more highly regarded Pac-12 teams some serious trouble.
Sure. Washington is never a team that I think you look forward to on the schedule. That's a tough place to play. It's a loud stadium. I believe they go to Boise the first week of the year, which is going to be interesting since I believe Boise is going to be the best group of five team. And I'm not sure it's that close. So that's going to be really fun. But yeah, the Pac-12 is a very deep conference. I love what Washington's coaching staff has set up here. So that's going to be interesting. I think Michigan's going to be able to take a big step up from next year. Tennessee's a great pick. And then really, you're throwing some darts around. Utah State could be really good. Louisville could be interesting. Miami, Florida could be interesting. Like, you know, who the hell knows? nobody thought TCU was going to be as good as they were this year.
Who's your preemptive biggest disappointment of next season? Who fails to live up to expectations the hardest?
I feel like Michigan State is in for a big drop. Narduzzi was a genius, and I think was instrumental in getting a lot out of more out of that defense. They're losing some guys here from a unit that wasn't as good as it was last year, and their schedule's hard. They host Oregon. They're Penn State and Michigan are going to be much stronger programs than they were last year. They have to travel to Columbus. I could definitely see Michigan State going something like 8-4, even after getting like a top 12 preseason ranking and kind of falling off a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very curious. I mean, I'm team Big Ten all the way. I sweat conference pride. But yeah, I think
just get that checked out.
We have to think about either Nebraska or Wisconsin will finish outside the top 25 next year, if not both of them.
Sure.
I'm not real high on either of those teams, especially with the, you know, sort of lateral and or backwards movements as far as the coaching staffs are concerned. Not to say that somebody like Chris will not, you know, build a strong program eventually, but it's just so hard to tell right now, and especially losing for Wisconsin, losing a guy like Gordon and not improving in the quarterback department. You know, it's tough to project them as much of a force to be reckoned with as they were this season.
Yeah, that's true. I think I like Wisconsin slightly more than I like Nebraska, and that's just because I think that Wisconsin has the personnel that's better suited for Crist right off the bat than Nebraska does for Riley. And Corey Clement is coming back for Wisconsin. I think he's quite capable of being a very good running back. But both those teams have a pretty big flaws, especially at quarterback. And so either of them could go like 7-5, and then Big Ten Coach of the Year Jerry Kill could get an upset over one of them to go 8-5 and crawl back into that 25 spot. You never know.
I love it. I love the never ending Jerry Kill shade.
don't think for a minute that this offseason, like, Luke and I aren't going to write a 4,000-word article. And you'd think, hey, Matt, you should be gracious. You just won a freaking national championship. And that's great. And I think I'll fully appreciate it more tomorrow or later in this week, because I'm still working. And I've got another, you know, hour and a half of work after we do this show. But it's a long offseason. And Jerry Kill and the Minnesota Golden Gophers, you're right in my crosshairs. I'm not letting this die. Because I'm kind of a jerk.
That you are, especially on the internet.
I'm such a boy.
You know, I think analytically we've covered what happened in this game. Can we just get some? Let's get emotional. Let's talk about.
Let's get emotional.
Give me at what point did you feel like you could sort of relinquish your anxiety, or did that point ever come before 0-0s, or were you sort of worried at all during this game that going to slip away, that this wasn't for real, that Oregon would somehow score three times in the last 2 minutes and 45 seconds? Give me your timing breakdown here.
I thought Ohio State was going to lose this game after the fourth turnover. And really throughout the last two games, I don't think I've fully been able to relax. And a part of it is just because of having to work and everything. But it wasn't until the 4th and 11 that Mariota wasn't able to convert with about 2:45 that I started to relax. And then I kind of let myself think about the full context here for everything. Like this, it's and again, like, I think this will sink in a little bit more once I have a little bit more time. But yeah, it's emotional. Like, you know, this is my first year writing for Land Grant as a full-time SB Nation employee. Like, college football has been like my job for the first time this year, and it's this has been a challenging transition in many ways, right? Like, you know, there's a, you know, I'm a dad, I had to move, all these other things going on here, and Ohio State, and, you know, covering this team and writing everything about it took up so much of that time and energy. And it's really exciting and rewarding to see how this story ends right here. After, and, you know, and some, you know, weird way, maybe validate some of the decisions I made to be able to get to this point. And I'm looking forward to fully enjoying it. It's been a lot of anxiety this football season. But man, like, this, you couldn't have scripted a better ending.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, college football is not my full-time job, much as I wish it could be a lot of the time. But yeah, and it's been, even as a part-time contributor to the site, it's been just such a joy to be able to write about this team every week and to cover this team and
to tweet and pretend that more than like 200 people follow me on Twitter, and pretend as if I'm like some big personality that makes jokes that the whole internet loves. You know, I wouldn't trade a minute of it for anything. All right,
It's a fun team, right? Like, it's fun not just because of the result, and everyone loves to cheer for a winner, and everyone loves to watch a team that puts up, you know, 11 billion points and just completely, like, you know, curb stomps Rutgers. Like, that's fun. But the personalities are fun. Darren Lee is funny as hell. Joey Bosa is not only an excellent football player, but like a funny Twitter follow and an interesting person. Ezekiel Elliott and his story, his family, they're fun. The transition here that Urban Meyer has made as a person over the last couple of years, that's been fun to witness here from afar. Like, all of this totality, not just the results, have made this like a thoroughly enjoyable thing. And you can't take that for granted, because that doesn't happen every year. So it's really fun to see this kind of confluence of events. Yeah. Where we're all of us are coming together, and we're spending so much time on it, and we've let ourselves become so invested into something that has really repaid and made that investment seem like something that's smart.
Yeah, absolutely. So, follow-up question to that, another emotional reaction question. Who, favorite member of this team? Who do you like best? I know it's hard to pick. It's like picking between your kids. But favorite player on this team?
Favorite player. There's so many really good ones. I really like Darren Lee. I love Darren Lee's story. I've mentioned this a couple of times here. Like, Luke and I did not think he was ever going to play for Ohio State. And I knew we weren't the only people. Like, we were like, I don't know what the position this guy plays. I don't know, you know, where he fits in on the depth chart. I'm from Granville, and so I'm predisposed to dislike New Albany. Like, New Albany is kind of like all of the negative stereotypes about Granville, like turned up to 12. And so I was already thinking, like, all right, I'm gonna kind of pick on this kid a little bit. And when he transfers in 2 years, and then, you know, we hope he does okay. And he's been awesome. And he's funny. He's insightful. He has this big personality. But on the field, he has this nose for the football and does something that I think Ohio State has struggled with over the past couple of years that used to infuriate us, especially last year. And that is that he tackles really well in space. And he's young. And on the team where we've been beating the pulpit about recruiting stars and about raw athleticism, to see one of the biggest playmakers on this resurgent defense be the guy that was the worst ranked recruit in the Ohio State's best recruiting class is really, I think it's a great story. I look forward to seeing what he's going to be able to do for what should be a stupid loaded linebacking core for the next couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. And you and I are actually in 100% agreement on that. I know it's not the sexy pick, but I absolutely love Darren Lee. He's enabled me to time and time again tweet that he's a bad, bad man, because he proves that true at least twice a week. He shouts out the Pears on Twitter. I can always respect a move like that. He's a joy to watch. He flies all over the field, makes plays. I really thought for about a half a second that he was going to come down with that ball. After he made a big hit, a big stop, he got up for that ball. And I, you know, convinced myself for just a second that that was it. He was going to reel that in somehow, and we just have another play to add to the highlight reel. And as it was still one of the more tremendous pass breakups I've seen in quite a while. So, yeah, hard not to love Darren Lee. I'm excited to see what the tandem of him and Raekwon McMillan do for the next 2 or 3 years. Depending on how high their draft stock goes and all of that. But yeah, just a joy to watch, a phenomenal football player.
Yeah. You know who else I really love? And this is somebody that the coaching staff has raved about every opportunity they get, is Evan Spencer. And there's somebody, I mean, like, if there's an Aaron Kraft on this football team, it's Evan Spencer, right? Like, he's not somebody who blows you away with, you know, his amazing catches or what he pulls up on the box score. But he's extremely smart. One of the things that makes Ohio State's rushing attack so dynamic and so powerful is the fact that their wide receivers block so well. And Evan Spencer is an amazing blocker on the outside, and somebody that this team's going to really miss when he's gone. He does all these other little things here that show up and make everyone else around him better. His attitude's amazing. And then he's responsible for one of the plays of the year with that ridiculous touchdown pass against Alabama. So even though, you know, he's not going to turn in all this as many SportsCenter top plays, I'm really glad he's been on this team and is somebody whose accomplishments have been probably a little bit undervalued by the general fan public over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. And in that same vein, to see Michael Thomas put together such a fantastic year after, you know, being a your token spring game guy who can't figure it out in the regular season, to see the year that he had, you know, capped off by that ridiculous catch and run where he did, you know, that's just, you're pushing the trigger over on the, or pushing the stick over on an Xbox controller with the juke that he had. That was a crazy play that he extended much further than it had any right to go. And that was, you know, it was just a nice cap to an already phenomenal season from him, showed that he really does have the talent to be a consistent threat in the receiving game.
Yeah, he's probably your best. He's probably your best returning wide receiver for Ohio State. They're going to be missing a little bit of depth with Smith and Evan Spencer leaving. But they're bringing a bunch of guys back. They have some talented youngsters to bring in there, and he might be your home run ball guy. I've loved seeing him grow as well, not just as a football player, but with his maturity. And when he's on, as his Twitter handle says, you can't guard Mike.
No, you cannot. Speaking of Ohio State wide receivers, I was a little disappointed to see, as much as one can be disappointed by a game like that, to see Devin Smith only have one catch after the string of games that he's put together. And, you know, this is his last college game. I mean, hard to feel too sorry for the guy because the last 3 or 4 weeks have probably earned him a few good-looking paychecks over the next year or two. But it would have been nice to see him go out and keep the Devin Smith voodoo magic alive, where statistically we have never lost a game or in which he scores a touchdown.
Yeah, I think if that had happened, that's when I would have been able to relax. Even if Ohio State was like down 2 touchdowns, like, no, this is an irredeemable law of nature. All Devin Smith does is score touchdowns, and when that happens, Ohio State wins. But yeah, no, he's been excellent. Brother, I think we're about the point here in the show. We got to start winding it down. We got a bunch of other things going on here. I'm sure we'll do another show here this week. We still have so much to talk about to properly put this season and this win and everything into its proper context and celebrate the people who deserve to be celebrated. For now, what a hell of a ride. What a hell of a game. What a hell of a season. What a hell of a team. And what a hell of a sight that we have to work on it with here. It's been fun, my man.
It has. This is the podcast I never thought we would record. So I'm glad that we're here. You know, nobody could listen to this and it would still be my favorite podcast of all time. So
yeah. Well, a couple of people are actually listening now. In the very beginning when you were doing this in May, you know, we'd be lucky to get maybe 200 people, and now we have a couple more than that. So things are going in the right direction, my friend.
Yeah, single-handedly to do with the fact that I have both a voice and a face made for radio.
Don't we all, man? Don't we all? Well, listen, our call-in number is 215-383-3986. We will be probably doing a couple of these shows here for basketball season and moving forward here. We are at Land Grant 33. We are on Facebook. We're at email with matt.brown@sbnation.com. We are on all over iTunes, itunes.com/sbnation, itunes.com/landgrant, Holy Land. For all the ways to access this show, we're going to keep doing it every week moving forward here, and we've appreciate all of your support, your calls, your listens, your retweets, your faves. You are the reason that we keep doing this, and it's to share moments like this with everybody.
Amen to that. I am looking forward to putting out that podcast where we do our preseason predictions in review.
It's gonna be great. All right, buddy. Let's go ahead and wrap the show up real quick. Where can the good people on the internet find you?
The good people can find all of my hot takes at McChuck, MCK Chuck.
And I am at Matt SBN. I gotta go. Let's go land this ship here and get back. I mean, I think today, the day of the game, we probably posted 20 stories on Land Grant. There's a ton of stuff to read. You can even go back and see some of the stuff we wrote before the game to see if that it makes sense. We're going to be dropping a bunch of stuff here tomorrow and throughout the week, so be sure to check us out there. In the meantime, Enjoy the rest of your evening. Enjoy the rest of your week celebrating your national champion, Ohio State Buckeyes. Thanks for listening, and go Bucks.
Go Bucks.